Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are. My name is GM Bui, and I am part of the Community Engagement and Learning Group and the Organization Design Forum Board. And I'm happy to introduce Dennis Hutchison, who is with Chevron. He is a senior org design advisor, and he attended a session. One of these sessions some months ago where there was a lot of kind of high-tech stuff. And Dennis then stepped forward and wanted to share some low-tech stuff that you can use, which I thought was fantastic. And so I'm really excited to have Dennis and his colleague, I believe Paul, joining us today to share some tools that they use to do org design. And so Dennis and his colleagues are org design consultants with Chevron, and they work across the enterprise and I think globally as well. So have lots of good info, and I'll just turn it over to you, Dennis. Thank you, and welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate the introduction very much. And that's exactly how all this got started. Attended a session. It was a really good session on how to use a tool specifically designed for organization modeling. And Paul and I have had some experience with that in the past. And what we found is that there are some barriers to using those types of tools, not barriers in the tool themselves, but just barriers in terms of the implementation aspect of it, having the budget for it, for one thing, and then having the time needed to get those systems set up so that the modeling and the data that you can pull out of it is accurate and usable. So Paul and I have used various tools over the years, and we thought I would just share some of these with you today to get your perspective on it. And then if you've got tools that you're using that are in that vein of analysis, then certainly want to hear what your experiences are, what your recommendations are for how to get the data that we need to make solid organization design decisions. So these are the topics I plan on talking about today. Chevron has a culture of safety. And so one of the aspects of safety that we elevate across the organization is operational excellence. We refer to them here as OE moments. And I'm going to share with you an OE moment that I typically use with a new project team, a new org design project team, to kind of help get the mindset correct or conducive for the kinds of thought processes you need to have with organization design to get away from the sticks and boxes conversations. And then I'll talk a little bit about how where Paul and I are positioned in the organization. And we've moved around over the years, but we stayed in HR, but I'll show you that. And then we'll get into the discussion about organization design data. And what I'm interested in knowing there is what kind of data you guys collect. I'll share with you the kinds of data we're collecting and how we're using that data to help us with organization design decisions. So part of that discussion around the data is sharing with you some of the value chains that Paul and I create when we work with teams, especially when time and budget are on short supply. And they're kind of an accelerated way to gather data about the organization that allow us to meet the scheduling demands that a lot of the leaders that we work with impose on us. And so we'll talk about value chains. We'll talk about role maps that we've used in the past and how those have been used to, I think, some fairly good effects with the organization. And then lastly, I'll share a couple of the tools that we use just to capture the data in a format that you can actually manipulate a little bit and get some kind of low-tech analysis out of the data that we're capturing. So I'll share a couple of spreadsheets that we put together to help us not only track the design data that we're gathering, but also to reveal some various comparisons in that data, some ways that I'll filter it so you can see how you can glean certain answers about the organization by just filtering the data a little bit differently. So those are the topics that I plan on talking about. Are there any topics here that you were thinking, gee, I wish he was planning on talking about X or Y or Z? And just feel free to jump in whenever you want. Anything coming across on the chat? So I'm not able to see that right.
Nothing in the chat at this moment.
Okay, then I'm going to move on. So a couple of guiding principles around, again, that we typically use at Chevron. Be present and participate in the meeting. One of the big cultural aspects of Chevron is that everybody's voice needs to be heard in the meetings. Everyone has something to share, and there's interest in hearing what everyone's ideas are. So feel free to ask questions, use the little hand feature that's built into Zoom. Raise your hand, and Dewey will be able to see when you're ready to ask a question, or just blurt it out. Either way, I'm good with either one. So the other thing that we ask at Chevron for all the employees is that you make your thinking visible, which means don't sit in the room and be thinking something, but never sharing what you're saying. That's one aspect of it. Another dimension of it is you may voice your concern, but you voice it in a way that really doesn't get to the point of what you really want to ask. So what we'd like for you to do is just make your thinking visible. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm struggling with. What can you tell me about this? Or I don't quite understand that, whatever the preface is, but be very clear about that you have a question, and we'll answer those. And then the other thing is that when other people are asking questions, we ask that responses to those questions are done in a very respectful way. So if you have a question, or if you're responding to someone's question, you didn't quite understand what they meant, or you don't agree with what they're saying, the way that we ask that you pose that question is, can you say more about this? Or I'm wondering if, or what about that? A way to preface it so that you leave the door wide open for possibilities, that you don't shut the door on people. So those are some ground rules. Anybody have any other kind of ground rules that we should be paying attention to? I didn't put very many virtual ground rules in here, but there may be some of those that you want to highlight. Okay, I'm going to keep moving. So what I want to start with is an OE moment. This is the one that I typically use with new project teams. At Chevron, when we have organization design projects, we're typically assigned a group of people within the function or within the business unit that we are working with. And so we'll have a project manager, we'll have maybe a data analyst, and then we'll have maybe 4 to 5 SMEs working with us to help us fill us in on the information about the organization itself. And when we meet with that team, I like to start with this particular OE moment. And what I'd like, and this is something that it's a participatory OE moment. So this is something I want you to do at home, if you're there, or at work, if you're at work, and if you're in a place where your coworkers can see you doing this, you'll just have to explain to them later what you were doing. But you start out by putting your finger in the air and above your head. And I would like for you to just rotate your finger clockwise in the air. And as you're rotating it, slowly lower your finger down in front of you, and then below you, and look at the direction your finger is going now. Is it still going clockwise, or is it going counterclockwise? And you should be thinking, okay, my finger is now going counterclockwise. So I want to just ask you guys, what changed from what you started with? Paul, is that your hand in the air?
Yes, I'm trying to figure out clockwise from not clockwise.
So your finger started out, you were rotating it in a clockwise motion, but then as you looked at it, it was clockwise. But then as you brought your hand down, your finger was no longer rotating in a clockwise motion. It now looks as though it's rotating counterclockwise.
So we have some notes in the chat. Susan says, our perspective changed, and Brooks said, my point of view.
Yes, that's exactly the point that I emphasize with these project teams. As part of organization design is part of that process is changing your perspective about the organization. Getting out of thinking about an organization is just sticks and boxes and names and boxes. And so we need to change our perspective. And so that's a simple OE moment that allows people to have that revelation that, hey, I didn't do anything different. My behavior didn't change. The movement of my arm didn't change, but my perspective did change. And just in that change of perspective, I see things differently. Thank you for that. And thank you for the responses as well. So Chevron's organization design team resides under the corporate HR department. And you can see the layers that we have here. Paul and I are actually housed within the mergers and acquisitions team. And that was a recent change. Before we were in the total remuneration team. And so we've moved around a little bit. But what that means for us is that anybody in our organization, anybody in Chevron can use our services. And it doesn't cost them anything. It doesn't cost a business unit anything to engage Paul and I. And so that's a big selling point for a lot of the business units under cost constraints, versus there are some other organizations within Chevron, some centralized expertise that business units have to, they do a billing process that causes those folks to be billed out for their services. The other thing is that we have a three-tiered service level. We have sort of a do-it-yourself level where we just hand our tools over to the business unit or to the functional team and say, have at it if they don't want any help with us. Or they could come to us and say, we want to do it ourselves, but we want to have coaching in the background. And so we'll serve in that capacity, or we'll do the full project, lead the project from beginning to end. And the other thing about the way we do organization design at Chevron is that Paul and I don't get involved all the way through implementation. We're involved from the operating model point all the way up to the detailed design. But after that, there's usually a change management team that takes over and partnered with our HR representatives, and they actually implement the solutions that we help teams develop. Any questions about how we're situated within the organization, within Chevron's organization?
Okay. Sorry, Dennis, I was trying to get off mute so I can ask that. This is Jude. Uh-huh. Which part of HR do you hand over in addition to change management? Is that within HR, and do you hand over to front-facing HR client services?
That's exactly right. We hand over to an HR business rep. And Paul and I typically get them involved at the very beginning of the project. So they are engaged with us the whole, as much as they want to be,
okay,
for the whole process of going through those different phases of the project. But then once they get into the implementation stage where you start going into, in some cases, there might be selection processes or some other HR related things, then we step out of it and the HR professionals take over from there.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question. Okay, I'm gonna keep going unless there's somebody wants to ask another question about that. Very interested in the kind of data. You're gonna see the data that Paul and I typically capture, and I'd be interested to see what kinds of data do you typically capture with your org design projects? And if you could just use the annotation feature, there's a little pin at the top that says annotate. If you click on that, you can type in your response and it'll just type anywhere in that white space would be fine.
So So if you haven't used that feature before, at the top of your screen, folks, there's a, you are viewing Dennis's screen, and then next to it is a view options with a down arrow. If you click on that down arrow, it'll pull up a drop down menu, and on there you can then annotate.
Oh, there you go. Thanks.
And then from there, once you're in the annotate, your option is to click on text, and then you just do a text box like you would in PowerPoint or Word, and you can add your information in.
Okay. Everybody gets span of control.
So for you, populate runs over somebody else's message, then you might want to move your box so you can, we can all see.
For the person who shared the organization goal and strategy, is that, or do you receive that just as a statement of, or do you also get numbers related to that, what their quantitative goals are and that sort of thing?
I put that in, and it depends on the goal and the strategy. If they have metrics towards their goals, then we try to get that. And if they don't, a lot of times when I'm working with the leaders, they don't necessarily, they can't articulate what their goal and strategy are. Mm-hmm. And they also don't necessarily agree. So we spend a lot of time upfront just to get them to get on the same page with regards to that.
Okay. That's helpful. How about on the current operating model? Are you finding that your organization, that's a very common thing to have as the operating model, or?
I put that one in too.
And, oh, okay. I'm
sorry,
catching all
like
of yours.
I'm cheating now. I know. A lot of times there, you know, there's an operating model. They don't necessarily know what it is. So it's also important for us to spend some time to help them get clear on how things are actually working in the organization and maybe where some bottlenecks or challenges are and where the opportunities are. So it helps them just to really understand the current landscape that they're working with before they go and try to change all of it.
Great. Thank you. And there's one other that struck my attention here. It was, what was it? I think it got written over by something else, but it was the, they already know what the, oh, here it is, decisions already made and they're inflexible. Would someone like to talk about that one a little bit?
Yeah, that's from me. yeah, sometimes leaders are handed decisions in terms of what changes can or cannot be made. So it's important for us to understand that at the get-go, so that we, you know, I use the word inflexible, but at least if there is, especially at the executive level, I work in healthcare, so sometimes those decisions are made already. So we need to understand it up front before we go for the engagement.
Absolutely. And that's something that Paul and I have also encountered, where we go to talk to a vice president of a business unit or something, and oftentimes the response is, well, I already know what I need. And so it's a question of getting them to suspend their belief long enough to allow you to show them there are many alternatives for how the organization could be aligned that might be better than what they're actually thinking it needs to be. So, I'm sorry.
Don has his hand up.
Oh
yeah. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to offer Dennis that when I read all of these, in addition to the one I typed, I find that in my work, literally everything I'm reading comes up. They just don't come up in the verbatim way they're typed, and they don't come up on day one of entering mm-hmm. with a sponsor. And they may not come up even 90 days later, but they're there in the background. And I find that many leaders find it overwhelming to even address most. That kind of what you were saying about, I know what I want. They also know the method, and it's usually one method. It's often boxes and arrows. Mm-hmm. And I just, I'm resonating with what I'm seeing and what you said, because ultimately, you know, part of our secret sauce, I think, is getting them to see other possibilities besides the single method they had in mind.
Exactly. Thank you for sharing that.
How to surface those, you know, how to surface those as they come up.
Mm-hmm. So Paul and I have a method. It sounds like, Donald, you have a process that you use as well, where we start out by creating a framing document for the project. Mm-hmm. And in that framing document, we identify what's the business opportunity, or what's the problem you're trying to fix, really. And then what is the vision of success? What's it going to look like when it's all working well? And then we also capture, what are some of the givens? What are some of the decisions that you've already made, and you're not going to go back on those decisions, because we need to know what the parameters are within which we're working. What areas can we probe? What areas can we no longer probe because you've made a decision about that already? And we also identify decision criteria. How are you going to make your decision as to which organization alternative is the right one for the organization? So that's probably that could actually be another presentation where we could kind of cover that topic of how do you frame an organization design project. But I agree, and I know Paul, if I could see him, I know he'd be nodding his head, is that saves us a lot of time, and it saves the project team a lot of frustration when you get all that stuff laid out up front and have alignment there. Thank you for sharing. Appreciate the comments, and I'm going to move on and show you the level of detail we're going to be talking about today. So when time isn't a problem for us, when we are given the amount of time that we think we need based on the opportunity that the organization is pursuing, we may start with the strategy. Well, we'll always ask what the strategy is, but we'll start with a strategy. We'll take a look at what the current operating model looks like. And operating models are becoming more prevalent at Chevron. They weren't 5 years ago, but we have been working very diligently with the organization to get that more in the vocabulary and getting people to understand what an operating model is and how you use it. And not just as a way to describe how you're going to go from strategy to execution, but also as a tool that you can then take into your organizations at the time that you're implementing the solution you come up with, and you can use it as an explanation, as a visual to a walkthrough, and people can follow your line of thinking about how you think that the organization is going to operate going forward. Again, this is when we have time to do these sorts of things, this would be ideal. Then we would look at the value chains that deliver the most value to the organization, to the shareholders, and then we would analyze the work that's going on in the value chains. We might do a deeper dive into those work activities to understand more about the work alignment and the nature of the work. We might create role maps, and based on all this current state view, we could start to come up with alternatives for what the future state operating model might look like, and then ultimately what the future state organization chart would look like. And with us, we look at the organization chart as simply a way to manage. It depicts a way to manage the work. Some consultants we've had come through Chevron will treat the organization chart as though it is the operating model. And we make a big distinction between a detailed org chart and an operating model. So for us, this is what an operating model looks like. This is what an operating model looks like here. It's a much higher level, and there's a lot more information packed in here that you could talk about than you can talk about when you're looking at an org chart. Org charts don't tell you a whole lot other than who's reporting to whom and what kind of work is getting done within that tower of management.
So Dennis, Jude here had a question, and Jude, you can tell us if your question got answered, but he asked if you could say more about what an operating model is at Chevron.
So we treat an operating model as the bridge between the strategy and execution. So an operating model tells you how work is going to flow through the organization in order to achieve the strategy. And operating models consist of very specific components that, you know, that could be another one-hour session to talk just about how you create operating models. But basically, they show you where work comes from, how it enters the organization, what influences how that work gets done, what supports how the work gets done across the organization, as well as what the relationships look like as the work is being done with, as it's flowing through the organization. So all of those are the components of the operating model, and together those provide a nice visual for a leader to say, here is how we're going to achieve the strategy. This is how we're going to operate as an organization. And you can have some, I think it provides a nice tool to those folks that are having to explain how their organization is actually going to work and how they're going to deliver the solutions that they're, or products that they're supposed to be delivering.
Okay, thanks for that. And I would just say one more, and then do you create it as part of beginning the work, or does it exist already and you use it as part of doing the work?
If it exists, we use what they have and we validate it. We'll test it to see if that really is the operating model that they're working under. If they don't have one, we help them create one.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions before I move on? Okay. Great. So I'm wondering how you guys structure your organization design work when you don't have much time. Do you just go right to the org chart, or do you have certain things that you are kind of like, we have to do these things without question. So if you could just do the same thing, type your responses here and let us know, how do you do that? Full blown, got to follow the steps, or you pick and choose based on time you have? And if so, what are the things that you tend to pick and choose over other things? And most of our projects look like the clock face for us. Yeah, design principles are really, really important for us as well. Yeah, desired outcomes, absolutely. Work on alignment, that's what we're going to talk a lot about today. I like step one, panic. Okay, those are really great. Yeah, make sure everybody's aligned, everybody's agreeing on what you're trying to fix, be clear on strategic shifts, great. Okay. Super. I like that one, the uniqueness, what makes this organization different from any other. For our customers here at Chevron, that might be too high level for them, because we'd have to drill down that a little bit more. But I certainly think that it's important to understand what's unique about the way that you get work done, or the way that you manage work, that sort of thing. Well, thanks for sharing that. Let's go into the next level. So one of the things that we have found is that it's really hard to, when we start talking about the work itself, and we start talking about which work is really core work versus which work is just kind of necessary, get the washout kind of work. Paul and I have had mixed results with our clients, because when you ask them about what's core, the work that they start reciting to you that they want you to capture is work that's like, there's no way it's core. You know, it's because everything is important. Everything they do is important. So we spend some time working with them to understand what's really important. How do you identify the work that's really important to producing either your solutions or the products that your organization contributes to the overall strategy of the company? So we used to use the APQC guide for how to categorize work, categorizing processes with the APQC, but that didn't resonate really well with our clients. And so we created this visual instead. that is focused on the value chain. So for us, strategy is the highest level. Then you have an operating model, but what makes up an operating model are the value chains that are created in the organization. So for us, the value chain, this level is the highest level of work that we start with. And then we start drilling down to lower levels, again, as time allows, and as the team's energy allows as well. So oftentimes this high level, the value chain level, is too high a level of work analysis to really gain any insights into the organization. So we have to start coming down into the lower level. So there's each link of the value chain, and then there's processes that are underneath each link. And we're gonna talk through these things in just a minute. And then there are activities at that level, more detail. And then at the lowest level is the task level. And I put these in black because we never go to this level in our organization design projects. It's too much detail. It's what Paul often refers to as we're too much into the weeds. We're not gonna be able to see what we're actually trying to accomplish with our overall solution. So we try to stay within this level, the process activity level, when we're working with teams. So this is an example of what that would look like. At the highest level, your value chain for Chevron is we explore, we develop, and we produce. There's probably another one here that says we market and deliver. So that's our value chain level. Then if you come down here, this is the value chain link, the develop level. And so these are the different processes that are involved in delivering the capability for developing the fields that we develop. So in order for us to deliver this organization capability of developing the fields, we have to plan the wells, we drill the wells, and then we put them into production. And so again, this is very high level. If we go down the next level and under the plan the wells, we say, okay, well, to plan a well, we have to figure out what the trajectory is going to be. We have to select the drilling equipment that we're going to use. We have to plan the casings, and we have to do the log objectives and select logging. So these are all the activities that go into the process of planning wells that enable us to deliver our organization capability of developing the well. So does that make sense in terms of how we structure that? Are we getting questions? Go ahead.
So there was a question from Don who said description of the operating model kind of leads him to think about SIPOCs, which is, I can't remember exactly what SIPOC stands for at the moment, but he's picturing an org as an analog to that. And I actually wanted to say I appreciate that point from Don, because it is similar. And what I have found that in the past, when you say operating model, a lot of folks get intimidated by that because it is so broad and big. But if I start with the SIPOC, which I think is supplier input, process, output, customer, it's easier for them. So we start with the SIPOC and then we build out from there. And then that captures that process that you have on here, the value chain, the links, the processes, and then the activities. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a helpful add. Yeah, appreciate that. And that's go ahead, please.
No, finish your thought, Dennis, and then I'll speak.
It was just a comment on the side, but I'd rather hear what you have to say.
Okay. No, what I'd wanted is actually a question. When you start from that highest level value chain in terms of working with a particular business unit, is that too high of a level for them? Do they follow you on that? Or how do you get them to from there to where you need to go? Is that too high a level for them to work with?
It's not. It's actually very helpful in terms of, again, the reason that we've started down this path over the last few years of getting them to develop their value chains is because it grew out of their inability to be able to really distinguish what was really important work that they did versus work that wasn't so much value add. Okay. And so when you start talking about the value chain, that helped them really focus in on this is the work that we have to do in order to deliver the value proposition that we've stated that we're going to deliver for the organization. So if I go to the next slide, let's see, do I have, yeah, I think I'll show you this in a second. So so with the value chains, when you are looking at the work from the value chain perspective first, you're gaining a very clear focus about which work is really important for you to achieve your ultimate goals with your organization. These are the things that if we don't do this, we're not going to get paid. We're not going to have a job. We're not going to produce for our shareholders. And so this is a really important aspect of what we include now in our discussions with clients. Out of this, we will look at role maps, and the role maps help us understand what the interfaces look like, what's the nature of the relationship between these interfaces when they're actually performing work under this link of the value chain. And then we can gather data about what we're hearing up here. We can capture that data in spreadsheets that help us look at that data in different ways. So these are the three things that I'm planning on talking about today. And the rest of the discussion we have today. And now, just a second here. Let's see what we're doing here on time. Oh, okay. So the way that I start out with the teams is, and I'm gonna kind of walk you through the whole process we have. So this is Chevron's one of our business units of value chains at the highest level. They manage the reservoir and they drill. So that's the development stage of it. Then what they've done is handed over to the production operations group, and the production operations do their thing. And then that's handed over to the marketing group and they do their thing. So this is the highest level value chain in the organization. Too high a level to really make decisions about how the work should be should actually get done, but it gives everybody a foothold into understanding where they're working. So with the team I worked with in Kazakhstan, for example, they were the production operations team. And so when you looked at the work, the value chain under the production operations, this is what they did. When I asked them the question, what do you guys do at the very highest level? They said, we plan production, we monitor it, we manage it, and we optimize it. And we do that all day long, and it's a big circle. It's not really linear. It should be a circle. And in this particular organization, there were six business units doing the same, they had the same value chain. And so that was part of the project, was that we were combining these six units. We were taking elements of those six units and we were consolidating them into a single business unit. So this was why I started at this level, because they needed, as all those six units needed to be able to see where they touched each other in the plan production piece and where they had commonalities in the monitoring piece and those sorts of things. So this gave them that high level view where they could keep track of where we were when we were talking about certain work processes. They have a visual in their head now. They've got a mind map. Yeah, of where they are in the process. So the next thing I did with them, since this was a pretty, and the stated value proposition for the production group was produce 1 million barrels a day. That was it. That was their goal. That plus, you know, doing it safely and in protecting the environment. So those are the three things that they listed as the value proposition for this value chain here. So then I said, okay, well, let's just look at the managed production piece of it. What do you have to do? What's the value proposition? What is it? What is the value that you deliver to manage production? And they came up with these. I don't know if you can read these very well, but they said, we need to deliver stabilized crude. We need to minimize and contain the impacts of any kind of abnormal conditions. And so they came up with these statements that are here, and I just captured them here. And I said, okay, well, if one of your ultimate value propositions is deliver stabilized crude and product safely, efficiently, and effectively. And we use efficiently is cost, effectively is reflects how the work gets done. So what do you have to do to achieve that? And so that's when they developed this. So we were kind of working backwards. We started with what is it you have to deliver to the organization? And then tell me at a high level, what do you have to do to deliver that? And they said, well, to deliver the stabilized crude, we need to run our routine tasks. We need to monitor the operations. We need to avoid any kind of abnormal conditions, and we need to optimize our production flows. So now we've got another alignment within the team about these are core capabilities that they need to be able to demonstrate to the organization in order to achieve this value proposition. Okay. And I'm going to build this out a little bit further. We'll go down to the next one. So we'll take a look and we'll say, well, what do you have to do? What's the work involved in monitoring? So when it went down to the monitor level, they said, well, we monitor the field, we monitor the plants, we monitor the export facilities. We monitor our utilities groups that provide steam and water and other things. And we monitor our power consumption. And then that ensures our operational continuity. So this was the level we'd finally gotten down to the level of the organization, of the work in the organization, where we needed to understand in more detail what goes into monitoring the field, what work is delivering the plant production monitoring. Because this is where there was a lot of commonality between the six different business units that we were working with. And so, and all of this is happening within a day, right? We've gotten down to this level of understanding within about a day. And so now,
yeah. Quick question, Dennis. So you're saying that this happens in a day and as a low tech process. Are you basically getting these folks in a room and you have a big wall chart and they're mapping this, or are you doing this virtually? I'm just curious as to the actual process.
We're all in a room. And for this particular project, this was a project that was being done in three different languages. So we had Kazakh, Russian, English. And so we were all in a room together. I had a Visio slide up, and I was building it as they were telling me what was part of it. And so they could see what they were creating as they created it. And afterwards I would go away and clean things up. But then now we have a foundation from which to say, well, what's the work that you have to do to be able to monitor field productions, to be able to deliver this capability? And so now we've gotten them into this mindset of, I don't have to talk about time writing. I don't have to talk about taking compliance training, even though that's work I have to do. They're not thinking about that anymore. Now they're thinking about, what do I have to do to monitor field production? What's the work? And so you've helped them focus their attention on the work that really matters at this point. And so the whole conversation has changed just by using the value chain as your anchor into what's important about what you do for the organization. And now that we've got this information here, we've captured some of the core work that delivers each of these links of the chain, we can start doing some low-tech analysis on this already. Because you're looking across here and you're saying, well, wait a minute, when we're monitoring plant production across all of the six business units, the things that are in red were things where all the business units were doing the same thing. The things that are not in red were where they had different work processes or different roles might have been doing that work. But somehow these things that were in black font were a little bit unique for the different organizations. So now we're starting to get into some information about from a design standpoint, where are some design opportunities, where are some design challenges in what you're going to be encountering as you go through this. So as you look through this, and if you've got these kinds of work activities in front of you, what sort of things, what sort of revelations would you be looking for now that you've got the work in front of you in this way? Anybody?
We're looking for redundancies.
Yes.
We are. That would be one.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be looking for opportunities for consolidation as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be looking for opportunities for the KISS model, what can be stopped. Mm-hmm. That I won't make that decision. It will be based on observation, and then they have that conversation in terms of, yeah.
Yeah. All those things are absolutely spot on, I think. And we haven't even gotten that far into the how things are working in specifics, but all those things that you mentioned are exactly what the kinds of conversations you would draw out of that that room of SMEs that do know how work is getting done. They know what's working and what's not working. They know where they're, well, now they might be able to see where there's redundancies. They may not have seen that before. Yeah. They can talk to you about where are the key integration points across here. They can talk to you about what are the best practices and where they're standardized, where there's not, where they don't have any standardization, where there's standardization opportunities. So all of a sudden, from just this view of the organization, you can start gleaning a lot of information about the organization, about how it's actually working and about how it could be working. So as they're sharing that information with us, we're collecting it. We're capturing it in spreadsheets, or there's other tools that we use for that, but this is exactly the kind of conversation we would have.
One real quick note here, Margaret said, which I think now the slide is coming up and suggests that you're gonna address that. Margaret says she asks around interdependencies.
Absolutely.
So who do you need to get the activity done?
Right. And so that's where I've started using role maps. And let's talk about that a little bit. So now that we've got the work up here identified, the next conversation you start having with them as you drill down into this, well, who's doing this work? And the key thing for us on this we found is that we need to differentiate between those people who are meaningfully engaged in the work, actually producing the outcomes of that work, versus the roles that are either directly contributing or supporting it in some way. For this particular project, we also needed to know where those people were located, because six business units, this is in a place out in the high plains of Kazakhstan, and it's spread out. And so a lot of the roles, we were centralizing some critical operations, but we were not centralizing, we weren't planning on centralizing everything. So we needed to know which roles were absolutely crucial to have in what we called the central control center, and which roles could actually be virtual that didn't have to be there. So one of the questions that we explored pretty heavily was the nature of the relationship between those supporting the work. Was it support that needed to be in the room, in the building with them, or could it be virtual? So that was one of the questions we were asking. But we captured what the roles were that were actually doing the work, significantly supporting the work. And then we also captured the roles that were not in the control room, but did have some support. So this is where we had the conversations around the lateral integrations within the organization and what's the nature of the relationship between the different critical roles that we had. And if there aren't any other questions here, let me go to the next slide. And so out of this, I created a role map superimposed over the value chain with the core work identified. So now we can see what's the organization capability being delivered, what's the work that goes into delivering it, and who's doing that work, and what's the nature of that relationship. So this, what's in the box, were the key roles for us. In fact, these two roles were the absolute critical roles. They were the central control room, basically. And then if we had them in the box, that meant they needed to be in the control room. They needed to be physically present. And if they're outside, then those were supporting roles that it was okay for them to be virtual, but they still contributed. But as we had these conversations about the nature of this work, then we were starting to gain information and insights about what were the what kind of experiences were needed by those roles, what kind of communication mechanisms were going to be needed to support the communication that was needed within the control room for the console operators and ship supervisors, those sorts of things. And then this also provided them with a view of how work changes as it passes through the different links in the value chain. So when you look at the managing the philosophy, you've got these roles involved, but then when you go to monitor the alarms, now you've got a different set of roles. When you go to reporting on the alarms, you can see how the support needed for that was getting more intense because alarm had been reported and now they're trying to figure out what caused the alarm, how serious is it, what do they do to stop it, that kind of thing. So now there's other roles that are getting engaged. And as you go through here to evaluation, now there's a team of people working on it, their coordination here. And the other thing that this kind of pointed out, this is sort of a side note, what are the, I can't quite make that out. Can someone tell me what that says? What are the something that no one else can do?
Those are left over from many other. Oh, okay. Yeah, they're just, right. Got to erase them.
So one of the other aspects of data that we got out of looking at the work from this standpoint was that we had heard just anecdotally, as we had had different meetings with different groups, the alarm champions were really overworked, and but they really weren't able to articulate what was happening with them. But as we started looking at the work from this standpoint, we started to see why they were overworked, because they were managing a lot of teams, a lot of information, making a lot of decisions to related to the alarms that were being sent or were going off in the facilities. So we realized that maybe we needed to take a look at this role's workload, find some things that we could offload from them so that they could really focus on when the facilities went into an alarm mode, they had the bandwidth to focus on that and not drop the ball someplace else. So there were some other tangential type of decisions that were made based on this view of the work and the way that the work was being done. And then this was after the fact. So once the alarms had been addressed, then a team would get together and go through a process of identifying why it happened and how to prevent it from happening in the future. So it's a much larger team, involves a lot more analysis and a lot more people involved in that. Okay, how are we doing on time? Yeah, 5 minutes. Okay, that'll be about right. So I thought I'd share with you a couple of the tools that we use for this. And let's see if it's gonna come up. Yeah, and I think I can. Okay, so did it show up on your screen? So you should be seeing a spreadsheet?
Yes.
Okay, this is the wrong one. This is the one I wanna show you. So this is an activity analysis spreadsheet. And this is just one that I did for a project that was in our Latin America business unit. This was a spreadsheet that I used where I was combining, there were four IT departments in four different countries. And our goal was to combine them to reduce the size of the four IT groups so that we could consolidate the work that could be centralized. And so this is a spreadsheet I used for that. We captured all the activities here, where the activities were occurring. And then these headings here, you can put anything in there you want. I had a front office, back office, infrastructure linking because that was going to be pertinent to the decisions we were making. I captured what the work was, whether it was core enabling and necessary, core enabling being work that absolutely directly maps to being able to deliver on the core work. Necessary work was just kind of busy work that we do, Paul and I often refer to as doing business with ourselves. Whether it was compliance, whether it was unique, standardized, or shared, which roles were performing it, where it was being performed in terms of the countries, what was the opportunity for centralizing it, either high, medium, or low. So now we've got data in a way that we can manipulate it to say, well, if first I wanted to see what's the work that is absolutely core to this organization. So now I can see this core work, and I can also ask myself, well, what I can also see the nature of that work. Is it highly standardized work? Is it unique work? Unique being every time I do that work, I could do it many different ways. But versus standardized is I'm going to do it the same way every time. So I think we all understand that when you have standardized work, it opens up some opportunities for you from a design standpoint of how that work gets done in the future. You can either offshore it, you can give it to some trusted third-party person. Maybe it's work that is of such a low value that you want to stop doing that work. Maybe people are putting a lot of money into standardizing that work when really it doesn't deliver that much value to warrant gold plating the way that work gets done. If you just get it done, it's good enough kind of thing. So you have those kinds of conversations. But this view of the work gives you another way to look at discussions you can have around how the work is getting done. So now I know what the work, what they consider core work. I know where that's going on. I know who's doing that work. And I know the opportunity for centralizing it or not centralizing it, those sorts of things. And then you can further look at, let's say you just want to show me just the work that is necessary work. It's work that really doesn't directly contribute to our ability to deliver on the value chain link. It's just work that we have to do. And you can look at to see if how much of that is standardized, how much of that is unique. So if you look at this work, it's just necessary and it's unique. It's unique because maybe they haven't looked into standardizing that work yet. And so you can drill down on what makes that unique. Could this be standardized? Is it an opportunity for standardization? Those sorts of things. So this is another tool that I'll use to help facilitate conversations with the teams to help them see the organization's possibilities in different light and maybe make some different decisions about it. The other thing that we keep is I call it a master watch list. So as I'm listening to conversations with SMEs and hearing their answers to things, they may say some things that strike me as important, but maybe not directly will directly affect the way I design the organization or the way they design the organization. For example, here was a comment that said that more than 90% of the control room personnel only speak Kazakh. Well, that's going to be important for the change management folks down the road. So I capture that as a watch point that needs to be paid attention to as we go through the project. And now I can also filter this on different elements so that, like, for example, what do we need to be doing like right now in sprint one, those kinds of things. I can look at the disposition of it. So again, you can use whatever headings are meaningful for you, but it's another way to factor in data that you've heard during your conversations on the value chains and not lose sight of that data. Later on when it might be relevant in the process. It may not be your process, it may be change management's process, it may be HR's process down the road from there. Any thoughts about that? Anybody having some ideas? I think we're almost out of time too.
Yeah, I really thank you, Dennis, because I think, the great thing I love about this spreadsheet too is I am of the belief that change management starts when somebody says, I want to redesign the org. And so capturing all this data as you're going through it helps with the change management. So are you able to share these spreadsheets without the Chevron data to help maybe stimulate some ideas for things that we want to capture?
Yeah, I can strip the data out of it and it'll be fine.
That'd be fantastic. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do see that people are starting to drop off because we are at the top of the hour.
Okay.
We can continue the conversation for those who can stay, but for those who do have to leave, I'll just say real quick, just a plug. First of all, thank you, Dennis, for sharing this. This is fantastic information, really useful. And again, I love the low tech part of it. These are tools that we can all access. Mm-hmm. And just a plug for next week, real quick. The Organization Design Forum has its annual conference next week. It is in Louisville. For those of you who won't be able to make it out there, it's next Tuesday through Thursday. On Wednesday, the 13th, we do have a hybrid portion, so you can join remotely and view the sessions there and interact with the other participants. So, Tanya, maybe you can, if there's anything else you want to say about that.
Yeah, all the information you would need is on the website. So if you just click at the top, there's a banner across that'll take you right to our conference webpage. We are hoping to have registrations sealed up here in the next couple of days. So we're prepared and ready to go by the time we launch on Tuesday morning. But if you have any questions about things, you always can reach out to me and I'm happy to track down what you need to know.
Great. Thank you, Tanya. So Dennis, if you have any final things you'd like to share, please go ahead.
Yeah. So for those that you can, stay on the line for just a bit longer. I want to show you one more spreadsheet that I use. So this is, again, as we've gone through the conversations with the SMEs and with the leaders in the organization, I'll capture comments that they make that are critical issues that have been raised. And they could be, they could also be design principles that they want to make sure that the organization solution reflects. And so this was a tool I put together to show them, these are the alternatives that we came up with across the top. And so we would score each of the critical issues. We would score each of the design alternatives against these critical issues. And so now they've got a heat map to help them analyze which of the alternatives is a better solution than the others. It also gives you a quantitative value at the bottom in terms of like the total score plus the percentage of critical issues that were addressed by the solution that they developed, what the median score was for that. And then this is the scoring that I use. With a 5, the critical issue is fully addressed. With a 4, it's mostly addressed, partially addressed, minimally, not addressed, or it actually makes it worse. So so that's another tool that I use toward the end, once we've gotten some alternatives put together and we're having discussions around which of the alternatives is a better alternative for the opportunity of success or the vision of success that we've already identified.
Dennis, Marissa had a question. Are these spreadsheets that you share with the client, or are those internal to the OD team?
Oh, we share everything with the client. Yeah, these are all tools that are meant to facilitate a conversation. Yeah.
So on those lines, do you somehow sort particularly that activity spreadsheet? Because that had a lot of information. I don't know that I could put that in front of my client. I'd really have to sort of boil it down to, let's look at these couple of things or something. How do you and when do you and what do you share with your client?
You have to, yeah, I hear that question. So that's something you'll need to, a decision you'll need to make based on your knowledge of your client. I work with a lot of engineers, so this doesn't scare them at all.
Okay.
In fact, they expect to see this level of analysis when you're working with them. And they're the ones who want to make the connections. They want to see the juxtaposition of data so that they can make meaning out of it. I offer the org design perspective in these sorts of things, and I'll guide them in certain ways. But they certainly, without exception, they've taken a great deal of interest in how to manipulate this data to reveal some understandings about the organization that would be helpful for them in making decisions later on.
And I think just clarify your operating model. I couldn't tell from the picture on the first slide. Is your operating model like many, many pages of those value streams, or is it just one top level picture?
It's just one top level picture. Yeah. Okay. And then I'll drill down into that. I kind of showed you guys the full thing, but and we'll start with when we start with the operating model, it's just the operating model itself. I don't introduce all the other elements of it. We just talk at a high level. How does work come into your organization? And this was really helpful for the supply chain guys when we were looking at changing the way supply chain worked. We had multiple supply chain organizations and they were trying to consolidate. And when we sat down and first I asked them about their operating model, got blank stares. And so I said, well, let's just create it right now. And so on a whiteboard, we talked about, well, how does work come in? Who are your customers? How do the customers get work into your organization? What does it look like once it hits your, how does it actually get into your organization? What happens to it once it gets deeper into the organization? How does the work flow? And when we finished that picture, just whiteboarded it very quickly. We did it in about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. When they looked at the picture, they said, and I've got a picture of it I could show you, but they said, no wonder things are so messed up. they knew they could feel the pain in how the work was going through the organization, but they had never seen it. Mm-hmm. And so the operating model gave them a visual of what it looked like to do work in their department. And so from there, they fixed everything that they didn't like about it. And I've got a before and after picture that's kind of interesting, but
is it possible for you to share the one page operating model in the deck that gets sent out? I just can't see the picture and that one first slide is sort of kind of tucked in there. It's kind of hard to see what it is. I'd love to be able to share that with my client because they're thinking the operating model is a high level org structure. And I'm like, no, it's not what it is. I'm looking for examples to share with them. And that first page is just a little difficult to read if you've got something that's more legible just on the operating model itself.
Where is it?
I think it's on the, it's
well,
just
this
there.
Was the high level operating. Yeah.
Hard to see that.
Yeah, that's, I can't share that because that's the essence of what this organization does. And there's some competitive advantage stuff in the way there's much more competitive advantage stuff in this because this is a better, this is what the 2B state was. This was the before where everybody was working in silos. And then this operating model, we integrated a lot of that work. There are lots of examples of operating models on the web.
What I'm finding is that they're all very, very different. I mean, there are some that are literally a high level org chart and they're calling that an operating model. And so it's kind of difficult to sort of say, this is what it is, as opposed to
if you want to, and I guess that's the only picture I have of the operating model. If you want to give me a call sometime, I can we can walk through that and I can show you some different versions of it that might be okay for you to share with somebody else.
Okay, we'll do. Be great. Thank you. Yeah.
In fact, anybody that's on the call, if you have questions that you want to just run by me or share with me information you want to share, then I'd be happy to hear from you.
Is your contact information on this deck that we're going to get?
It was in the, I think it was in what was distributed, wasn't it,
Anya? Okay, perfect.
My email address was there.
I don't know that we would have passed your email address out, but I can certainly, I'll put your numbers in the chat and I can include your email when I send out the notice to everyone that recordings are posted.
I'll put it on this slide too, so you have it. Okay.
Great, thank you.
That's all I had for today and I appreciate everybody's participation and thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
You're welcome, my pleasure.
Great, I'm gonna pause the recording. If anybody has a question or two, we can keep the line open for another moment.
I'll stick around for that.